This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, and today is my last day live hosting the State of Things. I begin my retirement with a glorious send-off from listeners and friends from across the state and the South. I am really moved and touched by the calls that we've received, but before we get to that, there's another big change on the horizon. January 1st, 2021 will be the last aired show of the State of Things program. And we got lots of comments from listeners when WUNC announced the ending of the program this month. So we wanted to talk through a few of those ideas and some of the comments with our station manager and president, Connie Walker from WUNC. Connie, welcome back to the State of Things.
Thank you so much, Frank. Thanks for having me on. And before I get into some of the questions, I just want to thank you for your service to WUNC and our devoted audience. You're a master at your craft. You made a very challenging job look easy, and I'm sure listeners don't understand that you've got a clock to watch, you know, when you've had in-person guests, not lately, but you got to keep them, you know, sort of calm and comfortable. You've got producers talking in your ear. You're talking back at them. So it's really, you've done a great job at it, and it's going to be hard for many of us to see you leave. I can understand the lure of spending some more time with your grandbabies, your lovely wife, Joanne, your children, maybe some extra time for swimming. So I just want to say first, I wish you all the best in your retirement.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you, Connie, and thank you for the way in which you've supported this program through the years. And so one of the biggest questions we're hearing now from listeners is about the decision to sunset the program after I leave. And I wanted to start the conversation with that. We talked about that decision and the process that you went through to end the program after I leave.
So in terms of looking at the future of the station and looking at what programs we should air, you know, anytime we make a programming change, and it's always, always, you know, somewhat controversial. Some people, you know, it's some art and some science. We use what are called Nielsen ratings in several different formats. It used to be Arbitron, but it's basically all been rolled into one rating system. So there are listener reports of how many weekly listeners, different day parts. It's all based on meters that people wear that measure what they're exposed to. And Nielsen makes a good job of trying to picking a representative sort of the market kind of people who are in that database. It's usually about 2,000 people wearing the meters at any given time. We also use a program that takes those ratings and dives deep into listener loyalty, which is a power of a program to attract an audience and more. So many of these have slipped some for the State of Things. And, of course, the challenges of hiring a new host of your caliber right now, Frank, as I've noted in other venues, we are grateful to listeners and business sponsors who are able to come through for us. But like so many people in businesses and organizations, you know, we're feeling a little bit of financial uncertainty right now. So we kind of looked at all those factors and decided, you know, let's take a pause. We don't really have time to kind of revamp the show. The staff would have been a little bit short-staffed with the holidays coming up, and you'll be there in spirit, but we're going to have some of the best of you on the air. But technically, today is, of course, your last day. So I didn't want to put the staff under a huge burden either, trying to figure out the future.
Now, there were also concerns about the loss of local programming and how that might contribute to local news deserts. You know, we've had reporters on, and we do cover local and state news in the body of this program, and now there's concern that that might be lost. How are you addressing that?
Well, I just want to say that WUNC has always been a great station for local content. It's always been kind of the heart and meat of what we do, and at this point, we're planning to move the rest of the State of Things staff into other areas of local content production, maintaining some things about the show at this point. I can't really discuss the details of what their positions will be, but we are looking toward where audiences are moving at this point. I see this as kind of a phase of experimentation during a time, as I mentioned, when it would have been challenging to revamp the current show. There is a thought that incorporating some different forms of media could be helpful to bring in more diverse and younger listeners with other content, or perhaps eventually an evolution of the State of Things. We are actually in the process of hiring a program director too. That's been a vacancy that we've had. So that will help us guide us in the future. I have some of that experience, but obviously I have other things to do too. So I've been trying to do it with the help of some other people on the staff. We also want to see how our finances and the economy go, so we have a better sense of what we could produce in the future. I do want to say, though, that I've heard some comments from listeners that Anita Rausch to become the host of a talk show. And I think, you know, she's a great talent, a terrific host. But in our scenario where we're affiliated with the University of UNC at Chapel Hill, we follow their HR rules to the T, we'd have to do a national search for a new host. I do want to note, Frank, how you came to me and advocated for Anita as a fill-in host. And after thinking about it, I said, okay, let's try it. And she's done great. And then later you both came to me with Embodied. And while the concept was a little bit unclear, I agreed to let the show try it. And as we know, it really has a following and the podcast version will continue. So beyond that, I think it's also possible we could do some special program shows to highlight Embodied or other aspects of what the State of Things has done really, really well. That all just kind of at this point remains to be determined, though.
What are the, to give us a maybe a more specific look at what the short-term goals are, because certainly these are issues that we've been grappling with for the past, in many ways, 20 years, the changing media landscape, the ways in which broadcast media are changing. That's been going on for a couple of decades. And also the loss of newspapers, their coverage, the impact of that, and the potential for public radio to pick some of that up. Again, conversations that you and I have had over the past many years. So what are your specific ideas about what that would look like, what we can do as we've discussed these things for so many years, particularly and specifically, what does it look like in your mind?
Well, obviously, for the short term, we want to figure out how to incorporate the team into other projects, and some of that might be podcasts, some reporting projects. We want to remain reflective of the talents of the State of Things team and how that can help enhance our offerings that our entire content team produces. We do certainly have a terrific, probably the biggest reporting team in the South, where we have already on our staff two political reporters, which is highly unheard of for almost any media, including public radio stations, two education reporters, one of them, you know, our regular education reporter. And then we also have a great partnership with the Fletcher Foundation, the UNC School of Journalism. The Dean, Susan King, is on our board, and we've been able to establish this ongoing project where we have a fellow for 2 years who is a recent grad of the, you know, the program. And then in fact, all of them have gone on to other jobs, and one has come back to WNC as well. So we're very excited about that. I think, you know, in terms of being the new source of record, which you and I have discussed a lot, I think we've made some progress in that area. I certainly have heard from more listeners that you are my number one go-to for news. So I think there are all kinds of possibilities for us, both long-term and short-term.
And what do they look like? Maybe we'll get a sense of your long-term vision in terms of staffing, the kinds of reporting we can do. You know, you and I have talked about it, the kinds of partnerships with investigative units, deep dive units. There's a lot of little elements out there. What's your vision for the kind of partnerships that WUNC can form and sort of what this would look like? What would WUNC look like in terms of staffing, in terms of programming? What ideas have come to mind for you over the past several years?
Well, one trend we've seen, and only a few stations have done this, but some stations have either partnered or kind of incorporated, whether it's an online newspaper, a lot of it's online newspapers, into their newsrooms and, you know, sort of worked in partnership with those types of organizations. There's a wealth of organizations, not only in the Triangle, but around the state of North Carolina, that we could consider working with and how in different ways to enhance our content and work with, sort of, you know, not just be just a radio station. I mean, that's not what we're going to be in the future. It's going to be more than that. Enhancing our digital content. We've already done that to a great degree, and we have some terrific staff with us who are doing that. But I know that, you know, that's another thing that we need to be right on top of. Maybe more people tend to read sometimes online, but I think video is a potential area, a big potential area for us as well, as long as it maintains that sort of public radio sensibility. I know there's, you know, people really appreciate sort of, well, I get the in-depth reporting, I get, you know, the high quality reporting, and that's what we want to make sure that we protect and value. We're fortunate actually to not be in the position of many other public radio stations right now, which is sometimes ending shows purely for financial reasons, laying staff off, sometimes across the board. Some are furloughing people or cutting staff salaries. Even NPR has had to do some of that. My philosophy has always been to try not to lay people off, and we're fortunate to have enough listener support and cash reserves that we should be okay. We didn't even lay people off during the 2008-09 downturn when we really were not so well positioned. So I don't anticipate that right now. I think there's a lot of great potential for the future of WUNC in all different kinds of ways. I can definitely see, you know, not all podcasts take off and do really well, but I think we can target different kinds of audience, maybe younger audiences than we have been able to on the air through
Let me ask you how you do that. How you do that, and let me ask maybe in this term, because I know that you're keeping the staff too from the state of things. How do you imagine that they're going to be, what are they going to be doing to help you meet those goals? I've only left you 30 seconds for the answer.
Well, I think some of that is topical. I think some of that is, you know, just coming up with things that are maybe a little outside what the usual is that we do. I mean, there's one podcast that we were planning to adopt. It didn't work out. But I remember Lindsay Foster Thomas saying to the senior team, because they were all kind of like, oh, I don't know. And she said, you know, this is not for you. This is for people who are younger than you, not to age the senior team. But you know, it's kind of branching out in new ways. And I think the State of Things team is perfectly positioned, sort of given their creativity and their talent to kind of help us go in that direction.
Connie Walker is WUNC's president and general manager. Connie, thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Just ahead, I'm going to share some of my memories from hosting this show for the past 15 years or so, talk with some old friends, hear from some listeners as I sign off. The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Today is my last day live hosting The State of Things before I retire. Good news is the show will continue at least until January 1st, so you won't be quite rid of me, because in December you're going to be hearing some rebroadcasts of some of my most memorable conversations. Those rebroadcast on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Anita Rao will host new live conversations Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays in December. But today's a day to reflect a bit on what this show has meant to me and to hear the good wishes that you listeners sent in. And here to reminisce with me is a former WUNC reporter and the current superstar editor of North Carolina Health News, Rose Hoban. Hello, Rose.
Hey, Frank. Should I be happy? Should I be sad?
Just be happy. You should be happy. But this is, for me, the perfect thing to do. And you were here you've been here a long, long time, you know. You were here when I started, I think. Were you here as a reporting when I got here or shortly after?
I was. And the first thing, the thing I remember most from when you first came was the food. Because you brought treats. You started showing up. You were driving down from D.C.,
Right. Yeah.
And you would stop at Trader Joe's, because we still didn't yet have a Trader Joe's in the Triangle. And you would bring those dipping cookies that had chocolate, and like they would show up in the sort of kitchen area at the Durham studio, and we would all pounce on them like hungry dogs on a bowl of meat.
Donkers. I think they're called donkers.
Yes, that's what they were. Super yummy. I think I gained like a couple pounds when you first showed up.
Because that's when I was coming down, filling in for Melinda Pancava, who had taken over the show. You know, remember, the show goes through a revamp. It had been created by Linda Ballins, really, as an arts show several years earlier, back when WUNC was a classical music station. And then it made the transition to all news, which all public radio stations had to do, a difficult transition for listeners. But to survive, it was the only hope. And, of course, it's really proved very successful for everybody. But that meant that the show was going to change substantially. Joan Sievert Rose then hires my good friend Fred Wasser from NPR. I worked with Fred.
Oh, right. About Fred. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Fred was hired to do talk programming and kind of beef up that whole local presence for WUNC as it moved into the news universe. And so Fred asked, we were good friends and we worked together at NPR. And he said, hey, I'm doing the show. I'm trying to create a show down here. You know, would you mind filling in? Sure. Then he said, do you want the job? I said, whoa, no, because I'm freelancing. I'm doing international travel. I'm working at NPR. I've got workshops. Thank you, but I'll come down. So I would come down 2 and 3 weeks a year to fill in for Melinda, who was on a 10-month contract. Because remember, she was living in Oriental. And so she would go home.
She was driving in from Oriental and then leaving, if I remember correctly, on Thursday night and then driving back Monday morning. It was grueling for her.
Because People's Pharmacy was on Fridays. People don't remember that, but this was a four-day-a-week show still then, back in the early 2000s. People's Pharmacy was on Friday at noon. And so she would leave Thursday after the show, go to Oriental, and actually drive back Monday morning to mm-hmm. do the show. And then when it went to 5 days, she thought, I don't need this anymore. At that point, my last child had left the house, and I said, you know what, Fred, I'll take it. So down I came. That's that story. And so, yeah, Trader Joe's, I would stop on the way, and people would say, well, hey, you know, would you like the job? We'd love to have you down here. And I'd say, you get a Trader Joe's down here, and I'm with you. So that's actually how that happened. I went in
that's
to go.
That's how it happened. I never quite knew what actually, you know, pushed you over the edge.
That was it was the Trader Joe's. Now it's the co-op. Who bothers with Trader Joe's now that I have the Durham co-op?
Well, you know, you can, I am a multi-store shopper.
Well, sometimes you have to be. So I'll give you permission to do that. What's lovely about this last day is it would have been a live call-in show, of course, but just because of the pandemic, you'd need more people in here, and that's not safe. So we asked people to call in with their thoughts about the show, and they were so generous with their thoughts. And so here is kind of one of the first reflections from Kathy Zinn.
Hi, this is Kathy Zinn from Pittsboro, North Carolina. I'm calling to say goodbye to Frank Stacio and to thank him so very much. I will miss you terribly, Frank. I feel bereft. You are a Renaissance man, and from you I have learned so much about new books, movies, reviews of theater. Whenever I'm talking about a book and I say, I heard it somewhere on NPR, I realize it was almost always from you. I've loved movies on the radio. You're able to talk about everything from theology to country music warmly, knowledgeably, respectfully. You've clearly done your research before you talk to those people who you interview. They clearly enjoy talking to you. I just cannot thank you enough for all you've done. I hope you continue to have a presence somewhere on the radio. Again, I will miss you so very much. Thank you, and happy retirement.
Kathy, thank you very much. I will miss you and all of the listeners who I know are out there supporting me. And I thank Tamara, too, who just called in. And sadly, we can't take live calls today just because the pandemic has put us in that place. Yeah, Renaissance. I mean, Rose, talk about those days, too, because we were just moving into news. There was so much ferment and so much room for experimentation that when I came up with my crazy ideas that I could never sell at NPR to the same audience, by the way, right? We're talking to the same people. They said it wouldn't work. And it did it down here. All this stuff worked. We could talk about theology and politics and music and poetry. And but those days, because we were making it up as we went along, pretty interesting times back then, wouldn't you say, Rose?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I was chatting with Laura Leslie, who used to be the yeah. politics reporter for WNC last night. And her wife is in the background saying, I always thought about Frank as being a public radio Jesuit. And I said, oh, well, no, he was a Franciscan, but, you know, point well taken. Laura and Maria both send their best regards to you on your retirement. But, yeah, no, I mean, you folks talked about a lot of stuff. Who is it? Bart Ehrman. You gave
yes.
him a lot of airtime.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting guy. I never would have known about his work if you hadn't had him on. Multiple
yeah.
times.
No, and I mean, those were great conversations because you're right. I mean, it was first the Sisters of St. Mary of Namur, and more on them later. They were the formative ones. They were the smartest women in my life. And my mother is to be credited with founding, you know, putting me in their presence. Then the Jesuits, who were, they're not bad, but they're no Sisters of St. Mary of Namur, I will tell you. Then the Benedictines, and then the Franciscans. So it's a lot of that. So when I talk to Bart, that's an interesting, because Bart, you know, becomes the kind of the superhero of the secular progressive movement, right? Can't we just be moral and see, you know, Jesus as a good teacher and all that? And it was fun to talk with him because to some extent we did talk about the mystery that gets wrung out, some of the awe and wonder that unfortunately became superstition and power and corruption in the church. But if you could excise that, if you could filter out some of that, some of the mystery and wonder that goes with it has also been lost in this kind of modern revolution. And he acknowledged that. And my conversations with Bart were so much fun because we were on this believer, not believer cusp. And it was kind of great stuff. And having him so close by was helpful.
Yeah, no, he's an interesting guy. Because of those conversations, I've got at least one of his books on my bookshelf.
So. There you go. He will be happy. Let's go to Christine now.
Hi, my name is Christine. I'm calling from Blairsville, Georgia. I wanted to say thank you to Frank Stasio. He interviewed my husband, Dr. Jonathan McCanson, for maybe six years ago about amphibian decline. He's a biologist. He was working with UNC at the time. And I wanted to say thank you because that was a big deal to me. I got to see the inside of the studio, and I got to see my husband in a different way because I usually think of him as a lonely old school field biologist, but Frank Stasio gave him a bigger voice. And it's hard to summarize what the show has meant to me. It made me feel so many things: meaningful connection to my community, pride in my state, a deeper understanding of so many things. And when my husband moved me to Illinois in 2015, I was so homesick that I would go to the WUNC website so I could listen to the state of things. But thankfully, he moved me back to the area. I'm in North Georgia now, so I can listen to the state of things on Blue Ridge Public Radio. Thank you so much. And I just wanted to leave a message to say that that the state of things meant a lot to me.
Thank you, Christine. That meant a lot to me, and I appreciate that. I'm on the line here with Rose Hoban as well, former reporter at WUNC, and now started her own website and doing North Carolina health news. Rose, let me ask you about this, because one of the things Christine points to here is the sense of learning about people in a different way. I mean, in this case, it was her husband. I think this has to do with the medium of radio itself and the sacred intimacy that is part of our business. Talk about for you being in radio, your choice initially to be part of this medium where the ear and that kind of whispering in your ear is so important to how the message comes across.
It's funny you mentioned that, Frank, because, you know, I started North Carolina Health News in 2011. I can't believe it. And we're about to hit our 3,000th story. And yet I meet people all the time and they're like, oh, I love your work on WNC. And I have to say it's a little bit aggravating because, you know, I've done a lot more work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've produced so much more because it's quicker, it's faster to produce stuff in print than in audio, which takes extra time. But that intimacy is really there. And I'm always telling people, I'm just a reporter. I'm just a pixel stage wretch. But that my voice comes out in their headsets or coming out of the dashboard of their cars, it really is very powerful. And I mean, you know, radio is my first love. I, you know, quit my nursing career specifically to go into radio. But, you know, I mean, like, you know, who of us married our first love, right? Like,
yeah. Oh, no, nobody. And nobody's quit radio more than me. But it is an art. And speaking of that, I want to bring Howard Kraft into this conversation now. A very special guest, somebody who's been with me in a lot of ways from very early on. Howard Kraft is a playwright. He's an arts educator. We've been creative collaborators on an audio drama project, and a longtime guest on the show and a longtime friend. Howard Kraft, welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be here, Frank. You know, as they say, life has changed, so I guess we shouldn't be, just take it as it comes. But definitely gonna miss you on the radio, man. I was just thinking here as I was listening to everybody. You know, you mentioned arts and education, and when I would be in the schools, it's like around 12 would always be the lunch break. And, you know, you can't go in the teacher's lounge because it's kind of dangerous in there, right? So I would go out to the car. And that would be how I would spend my lunch break, would be listening to you. And this is way before Jade City. And then, you know, once we started doing Jade City, going out to the car and then hearing the program on the radio program that I've been listening to forever at 12, is just, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, The Five Heartbeats, the first time they hear that song on the radio and they go nuts. So the first time I heard Jade City on your show in the car, I didn't know if they were going to let me come back into school because I was going nuts in my car.
Well, it's a little bit what Christine said, too, you know, the idea of hearing something in a new frame. I mean, you created Jade City. You created all those characters. You've heard them 1,000 times. You brought them to life on stage. And now it's in a new format. It's in a new medium. And it's coming out your car radio where you have all those other associations. So I think, you know, that's part of the magic and the mystery that you have to embrace, that you have to sort of be aware of. If you're doing the job, you have to understand that it's not just the words you're speaking or the content that's coming out. There's a whole other environment that's created. And if you can kind of keep that in mind, I think that's what makes for a successful show and a successful artist. I want to talk with you more, Howard, about the arts, but I'd like to get some more listeners on. Bill Smith. Bill Smith. Oh, our friend from Crook's Corner, late of Crook's Corner, now retired himself. Let's hear from Bill.
Hey, Frank. This is Bill Smith in Chapel Hill. I just wanted to call and thank you for all the wonderful shows I've heard over the years. I want to especially thank you for Back Channel, which I thought was really forward-looking and really important. And it kept, it started the discussion that we're having after George Floyd long before that event happened. So I've always been really grateful when I would catch one of those shows. And I also wanted to say how sorry I am that I didn't get over there with tomato sandwiches this summer. It just wasn't the year for it. But anyway, enjoy your retirement, okay?
Bill Smith. The reason I retired is I thought I'd never get another tomato sandwich. So I thought, well, if I'm not going to get more tomato sandwiches from Bill, why should I keep working? So I quit. I quit. Bill, every year, when we were in Chapel Hill, of course, it was easy because he rides his bike. So he makes these perfect southern tomato sandwiches, white bread slathered in mayonnaise and fresh tomatoes with a little salt and pepper, and he'd bring over a shopping bag full of them in brown wax paper bags. And then when we moved to Durham, he would get on his bike, take the bus, ride his bike here and deliver the bag sometime in July. And then this year he didn't do it, so I quit.
Yeah, I understand that, Frank.
It's great. I want to get to one more before the break, and then we can take a little break, and then we'll come back, and we can talk some more. Let's go to Carl.
Hi, this is Carl from High Point, North Carolina. I wanted to just wish Frank Statio a happy retirement, and to thank him and his staff for the hard work they did in their monthly live broadcasts over in the Greensboro area. They would come over once a month and set up shop and do a live broadcast from Triad Stage's cabaret. And there was a lot of work behind that, I'm sure. One of the nice things that Frank would do each broadcast is before the show started, he would make a point of wandering through some of the tables. This was a cabaret type of setup with a lot of tables, and make sure that he would introduce himself and chat with the guests such as myself and just kind of welcome them to the place. And I thought that was a very nice thing to do. He could have stayed up by the microphone and been a little remote, but he did reach out to people, so I thought that was extremely nice. So I did want to wish Frank the best of luck and to thank him again for reaching out to the entire state and giving other people some attention that might not get it otherwise. So again, thank you from High Point.
That's Carl from High Point. Carl was at every one of our Greensboro broadcasts, and I knew I was in Greensboro when I saw Carl, who had come in from High Point, which is a little bit of a hike to the Triad Stage on Elm Street, and I deeply appreciate that, and it was always so good to see his faithful listenership. And going to Greensboro, I mean, that was one of the things we were able to do, is sort of to bring you the whole state. And as I used to tell that audience every time we went, I'm grateful that they welcomed us, because it really made us focus. We dare to call ourselves the state of things, implying that we're going to talk about issues that matter to the whole state. But honestly, when you sit in one place, it gets real easy to have everything close in on you. So to be able to go to Greensboro, to go to, you know, when we'd go to Asheville a couple times a year, went to Wilmington once, it opened our minds, and then we could open the state. And that's what this kind of local coverage can do. And only, you know, a show like this and a public radio station like this, I think, can do that. So I am honored to have been part of it all. And we'll talk more about this on my last day. I've got Rose Hoban with me, who's the founder and editor of North Carolina Health News, and Howard Kraft, a local playwright and frequent guest on the show, and more listener calls on the state of things as I say farewell. Please stay tuned. This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Big day for me today. I am retiring. That means 17 and a half minutes away from finishing my last live radio show. But never say your last live radio show, because you never know. So we ask listeners to send in well wishes and good memories of my time with the show, and I'm so appreciative for your warm thoughts and all the emails and the letters that you've sent. You've been so warm and gracious over these past, well, in many ways, 18 years. I mean, I started coming down here in 2002, and I will say that the warmth and the graciousness and the intelligence of this audience, when we did open the phones, and we were going to do that today if it weren't for the pandemic, because you have to bring in a lot of staff to make that happen. We'd open the phones, and the level of discourse, the quality of the questions that we got was always so high. I did Talk of the Nation. I filled in on Talk of the Nation, and I cringed every time we opened that line, because I never knew what I was going to get. Never happened here. It was so. All of you who have listened to the show and supported it, I am nothing but grateful. And I'm going to miss you very much. So we'll talk more about that. We'll listen to other listeners and also Rose Hoban, a former reporter at WUNC before she went off and founded North Carolina Health News, and Howard Kraft, a phenomenal local playwright, a writer, and an educator. Howard, let's talk about the relationship between the show and the local art scene, because I know that's important to you.
I think, you know, over the years, man, the state of things is created a platform for artists to be able to let the community know about the goings on, you know, and just the whole, you know, from Robin and everybody, you know, the way, and you at the head of it, the way you have the ability to make people feel comfortable and disarm them and your knowledge of whatever it is. I was talking to Grant the other day. If, you know, it was a guest who was talking about the fluctuation in the price of peanut butter in Indochina, you'd be able to get deep into that topic with them, you know. And so as an artist, to get really good questions about our work and to be in a space where we feel comfortable talking about it, man, it was just a lesson. And I know the arts community, that's something we're going to really, really, really miss. Because I would love, you know, to tune in and hear about, you know, what Charlotte is doing or other artists that you would bring on the show, you know, from all types of art, from visual artists to musicians. So that was a platform that you guys created on that show that, you know, really I didn't see it anywhere else around here. And I was so thankful for it. And so many, I know I speak for, you know, for every artist that's had the opportunity to be on that show, of just how important it is and how much it meant to him, you know, in a kind of underground way. You hadn't made it in as an artist around here unless you've been on the State of Frank thing. Yeah. You know, if Frank had interviewed you, you know, you still got work to do, you know what I mean?
Well, I thank you for that, Howard. I appreciate that. And, of course, that's been a very important goal. I always feel like a community, if it's hearing itself reflected through the media, whether it's radio or television or print, that if I put poets on the air and I can have an engaging conversation, we would so frequently get emails from people saying, you know, I didn't think I liked poetry, but I really love that conversation. And my feeling was, if I keep putting this out there, you're going to suddenly believe that you love poetry, and you're going to believe you're in a place where poetry flourishes, and that's part of your community. And once that starts happening, that becomes part of your identity, and I think an important way to go think about yourself and your community going forward. So it's a bit of a, you know, it's a kind of a subversive trick on my part to allow people to know parts of themselves that maybe they didn't have access to. And by the way, just to let you know, the market in Chinese peanut butter futures has stabilized, so you shouldn't worry. Let's hear from
him. Hello, this is Sean Morrow from Raleigh, North Carolina, calling to thank Frank Stasio for all the wonderful programs for so many years. I used to hear them coming when I got home from work at 8 o'clock, and now I'm retired. I often catch them at midday, and they've just been wonderful. I'm going to miss you a lot, Frank. You've been a gem. Just wonderful. And I enjoyed today's program with Midnight Cowboy because I saw it years ago and brought it all back to me. It's a film I love too. So all the best for the future, and just couldn't be more grateful for all the entertainment and joy you brought. Bye-bye.
That's Shannara. Shannara, thank you so much. And no, it's been a pleasure. And these are the things that I've enjoyed talking about. I mean, my joke has been that, you know, that I finally found a job that's perfect for a guy with ADHD, because I really do. I've jumped from one. And this was not a pleasure for the Sisters of St. Mary of Namur, who are responsible for my moral upbringing. And I thank them. But it was not fun for them when my mind would flit from one place to another. They're talking about the Roman Empire, and I'm thinking, that's kind of like the Greeks. And I wonder if that has anything to do with the presidential election. That's just no fun for them as you jump up in your class, as your seat, and start making connections. So I finally found a job where that's good. But Rose, talk about this, though. The idea in journalism, I mean, you now have this niche, right, where you're talking about health news. But I know you, and you're a Renaissance person yourself, as you said, trained as a nurse, you worked as a nurse, and you bring that sensitivity to the kind of reporting you do, even though it's in some ways a kind of a narrow niche. Talk about the way the rest of your life, the arts, the sciences, sort of inform your work as a reporter who's got a very important niche to report on.
Well, I mean, one of the things, I work with a lot of young reporters, and one of the things I talked to them just this week, talked to them about different ways of framing a story. And I was working on a story that we're going to run next week about how COVID has played out at the state's HBCUs. And, you know, she kind of jumped into the story and I was like, no, it's like a movie. Like, you know, when it starts out in the universe and then you see the earth and you get closer and closer and then get to your point, right? I'm constantly thinking in like either movies or in visual arts, and I think that helps the way we write things so that people can kind of get at it. I don't know. I mean, I just try and bring some of that sensibility into the work. And then, you know, like, and every once in a while, I mean, most of the time I'm just cranking out like policy stories, but sometimes try and get some music or rhythm into it, like you're thinking about, like, what's the rhythm of this story?
Exactly.
So, you know, you can't just be a one-dimensional person.
And allow all of that to inform what you do, which is why I love working with creative people like you and Howard. Howard, when I first saw Jade City on the stage, what I saw was this man loves music. As I listened to those actors, brilliant actors, perform what I think is just sterling dialogue, but the pace of it, the rhythm, the cadence, said, this man loves music. And that's what you told me. So, no, I hear the music first before you write. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Even in not just the music of the language, you know, in my process, I can tell you what a character sounds like before I can tell you what they look like. I guess that's just how I'm wired. But, you know, I was just so honored, you know, when you pitched that idea of turning it into a radio serial, because, of course, you know, I'd never done it and I never even thought about it in that capacity. But then working with you and learning what the possibilities for that show was on radio. And now I'm actually teaching an audio drama class at UNC. So not only did we, you know, work together to transform that series, but, you know, you hooked it up so a brother can get some direct deposit. You know what I mean? So,
that's just great. Lindsay Foster Thomas, by the way, deserves a lot of credit. She was the audio engineer and the producer for that first series, and brought a lot of the a lot of the content and the aesthetic to that. I want to play this next clip. I wish this had been a surprise. This is why, if it had been live call-in, if this had been a surprise when I heard it. Bill, I can only tell you, you knocked me off my chair.
My name is Bill Continelli. Frank may or may not remember me, but I was there back in 1971 when Frank got on the radio for the very first time at Canisius College radio station WVOC. Frank, I don't know if you remember that. That's 49 years ago. But I was there for your very first radio broadcast, and I will tune in to your very last radio broadcast. Thank you very much all the years, Frank, for everything you've done. I appreciate it. Take care. Oh, and good luck.
Bill Continelli. What up? Of course I remember you. Bill Continelli. Bill was, he was William Continelli in high school, of course, because not only was he there for the first broadcast at WVOC, the college radio station at Canisius College, we also went to Canisius High School together. And those are your Jesuits, Rose. And but Bill was a very shy guy, very shy, a slight guy. And he would, in French class, this is Mr. O'Connor, our French teacher, would love to sneak up behind Bill and just yell, "Continelli!" Scared the merit out of the kid. He would jump 3 feet in the air, but he was a techno geek. He was all wires and tubes. So when I got to the radio station, I had no idea I was just going to do a radio show and be a personality. But then I thought, oh, wow, you can make drama. You can write scripts. And Bill was the guy who understood what a compressor was and an equalizer and what this patch bay did. So he was with me every step of the way explaining the technology so that I could start doing some of those very first audio dramas when I was in college. I flunked out of Canisius College and then, went on to other things. He finished. I can't believe Bill, if you're in the area, send me an email. He probably did, who knows? Send me an email, fstayshow@wnc.org, and let's get together when we can get together again. That's amazing. Goes back that far, though.
Hey yeah. Frank, there's something, a memory that is one of my favorite memories from State of Things. And you've talked about entertainment and the arts, but you haven't talked about the Friday music segment yet.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think was really important for a lot of young artists. Like Howard said, we know a lot of young musicians in the area, and when they were on the show, it was a huge deal for them. And one of my favorite memories was we had just moved into the Durham studio, and so the studio was kind of like not completely perfect yet, and you had this young band called the Carolina Chocolate?
Oh, right. They're just won a Grammy, but nobody had heard of them.
And this was before.
Really,
that.
Before the Grammy. Wow.
This was before the Grammy, and they crowded into your studio, and it was Rhiannon and Dom Flemons and Justin Robinson. And I think it was Dom who was playing the jug, and he was banging away on the floor. And that was when we realized that we needed to put sound back underneath the floor.
There's windows.
We were going to have musicians in that room.
The windows in the studio are perfectly perpendicular, which is no studio is like that. You do them on an angle so that the sound doesn't reflect equally. And they are there. So that was just one problem. And I was told when I got here, I said, oh man, the music scene in North Carolina is stupendous. We need to have music on, live music once a week, live in the studio once a week. And at the time, the program director back then said, well, you can't do music because all of our research shows, you talked about, we heard in the first segment a little bit about the research data and the ratings. Okay, well, all the ratings and the data say people who listen to talk don't want to hear music. And I said, well, okay, well, then I can honor that. And then I just went ahead and did it. And then, of course, it became the most popular segment we did. Every Friday, we'd do live music, which I never told Robin Copley this, but nobody does that, right? We wouldn't do that at NPR. They'd be too scared. No engineer would say, live music, I can't do that. They do now.
Oh, and you were lucky to have Robin and
Robin Copley.
Segment.
Let me shout out to Robin. I'll interrupt this story because we neglected to say goodbye to her. She left last year. She retired. And it was over the holidays when we sort of were on tape. So let me just say, Robin Copley with me from the beginning, and we love Jenny Lawson. She has filled in and now is our engineer, does such an amazing job. Robin with me so many years as we're experimenting, as we're making things up, when nobody had a lot of experience with this. Robin would just get on and figure it out and learn and learn and learn, and we miss her so much. We're so very lucky to have Jenny Lawson, who has been our tech director since then. But honest to goodness, Robin Copley, thank you, thank you, thank you. And we missed it because suddenly we were on tape. But yeah, yeah, they said we couldn't do music, and we did, and of course we can. And
it was, she lives with a musician. Her husband, Willie, is a musician.
That's right.
So, you know, that she really had the heart for the music.
Yeah, it's great stuff. And I would tell you, the other thing that they said we couldn't do was the Monday meet, same program director said. Well, you can't talk. Monday meet, we talk with somebody for an hour, one person, and we talk about their personal and professional lives. And again, an extremely popular segment on the state of things. Every Monday we do it. Said, you can't do that. All the research shows people stop listening after every 7.5 minutes. You have to change subject. Nobody will listen to one person for an hour. You can't do it. It won't work. And it turns out that was not true. So anyway, do I have time? Oh, I don't have time to play any more of these. Well, let's keep talking then. It's been great. Let me just tell you that being doing this show and being able to experiment, and here's the thing. As I said, I would propose some of this at NPR when I filled in various talk shows and magazine shows. And like that program director, I was shown the research and told why it wouldn't work, why you can't talk about religion on the radio unless it's going to be from a completely secular, you know, sanitized point of view. And music and poetry. Oh, poetry. My God, don't have them read poems on the radio. And it's the same public radio audience, right? North Carolina, it's the same folks. So I am so grateful to all of you out there who for this past 15 years have shown radio, have shown NPR. You have shown NPR what it can be. You have shown me that people care about their community in many, many ways. They care about the arts. They care about the politics. They care about social justice. They care about the social, spiritual, and political and cultural life of their community. You proved it. You proved it to this community. You proved it to the radio station. And you have done nothing but make me grateful for the time that I've been able to be your host on the state of things. So thank you. Thank you, Rose and Howard. Thank you both very much for sharing this.
It's a pleasure for being here. I'm very honored to have been part of this.
Lots of great producers who've also been part of this show, but most recently, Anita Rao, who will host programs on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday next month. My favorite shows, Tuesdays and Thursdays next month. And that'll be it, but we'll be on for one more month. Rose Hoban and Howard Kraft. Right now, the State of Things producers are Anita Rao, Amanda Magnus, Grant Hall of Mormon, Kaya Findlay, and Stacia Brown. Elikam Dodor is our intern. Jenny Lawson, our technical director. Sean Rue helped out today. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia.